This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
All right, so Steve Simmons is back in here from Sun Media. And Steve, you were the beneficiary of McDelivery yesterday. We both were, right?
Well, I was very humble in my approach to the mountains of food that McDonald's brought for us, or Uber Eats brought.
16 bags of McDonald's.
Yes.
And look who comes in a day late and a dollar short. Noodles is in here for the first time in like 5 weeks.
Yeah.
And I thought you and I were going to storm through that wall like the Kool-Aid man yesterday. 16 bags of McDonald's.
Well, Sean Levine would have been like a linebacker, hip-checking people and running people over. I saw an alleged picture of him just boxing out. He was like Wile E. Coyote building a brick fence around it.
You broke down the Zapruder film that was Levine tackling the McDonald's bags yesterday?
Apparently he wanted to do some work on it, but I think we would have slid in. I can't believe, and people were sending me notes on Twitter saying, and it's not even me, they were worried about the big cat. Like, if the O-Dog had have been here, he would have been baby monkey by about 4:45.
Well, it showed up late, though, which actually a veteran move.
That is a veteran
right?
move.
Because it showed up probably around 6:15, I'd say, and we brought it in for the second segment of the 6 p.m. hour. You're right. If this showed up at 4 p.m., and we've had a lot of that happen before,
yes,
where like pizza gets delivered around 3:30, it's over before we even get on the air.
We can't even get a word out, or we're half asleep.
That's the biggest problem.
We're all cranky because the blood's rushing to our stomach. Like, mm-hmm, it's a battle, but I'm excited to be in for a little
good
bit.
Good to see you.
What impressed me was how nice the bags looked. I mean, it almost looked like Christmas, the way they decorated them and the way they had them all going. It almost looked like Christmas morning.
So what was it again?
It was McDelivery Day yesterday. So what's happened is the Uber Eats app has now access to McDonald's. So you can order McDonald's to your house. You just got to download the app and you're in business.
For $4 extra, I guess it's $4 to pay the Uber Eats fare.
Nothing wrong with that.
And, you know, if you've had a little too much to have the night before, as we did back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, our cure for hangovers was to go to McDonald's and order as much food as possible, as much as we could afford at the time.
It's a great question. Like, what will be the peak hours for Uber Eats delivering McDonald's? Is it like 2 in the morning?
No, 11 a.m.
You think 11 a.m.?
Get out of bed at 10. You got a growl on you, but you don't want to move. So you're going to, if they have all day breakfast, I think 11 a.m. could be a peak hour.
It's a great question.
Maybe that's your poll question for today.
I think you're probably right.
Really?
What do you think is the peak hour for McDonald's delivery?
11's perfect because, you know, if you had too much and you're feeling awful, like, you're going to try and sleep in. And even if you can't sleep in, you're just going to lay there sort of vegetating.
But by the time
you sort of stand up and get any energy, you're into that 11 o'clock thing.
I can get down with that. This might sound like a silly question, but in order to be an Uber Eats delivery guy or girl, do you have to be on a bike? Like, I only see them biking around.
Really?
Like, when you're downtown, if you're downtown in Toronto, you can tell that the Uber Eats guy, he's always biking around. He's biking down Yonge or University. I was down at Massey Hall a couple of weeks ago. I saw two different guys, like, within 5 minutes, but they're on bikes all the time.
There must be a winter, you know, car thing going on, but maybe in the summer it's like, you know, the courier firms,
it'll take, if it's driving out to you, I guess it's just from the local McDonald's.
Well,
right?
I would hope so. I mean, if he's coming the 45-minute bike ride, I hope he's not going to the McDonald's.
He's at Yonge and Egg.
Yeah, he's at Queen and Spadina.
Could you call Uber and get their guy to pick up and deliver for you?
I don't know how that
I
works.
I think you could, but again, you can get anything with the right amount of money, Steve. That's what I
absolutely
believe. Like, that's the O-Dog way, is you slide anybody a little extra or palm somebody, they'll let you in, they'll come and deliver you food or drink.
I told Brian a story yesterday, I'm just going to quickly repeat, about we had Chinese food delivered to a Blue Jays game.
That would be amazing.
In one of the first years, and you had to leave a ticket for the delivery guy. So he delivered them to your seats.
That's impressive.
Yeah,
that how was, much foresight is that? I mean,
it was a doubleheader.
Now, yeah, doubleheader.
That's brilliant.
And Now, is the press room food stink there? Or?
We weren't pressed then. We were, oh, you know, okay. This was like 1978.
Like, imagine sitting in the stands. You're going. You know, you're gonna be at the ballpark for like 8 hours. You're there for the first part of the doubleheader at like 12:30 or 1. The next one's gonna start whenever it starts, maybe 7 o'clock. So I guess at this point he's thinking, let's order around 4:30. It'll be in between games. We're going to stay in the stadium.
Yeah.
Left the extra ticket. The Chinese delivery guy shows up with the food, gets the ticket, brings it right to their seats.
I wish in those days your phones, you didn't have phones, but if you had phones, you had cameras. I would have loved to get a picture of that guy walking down the aisle carrying the bags.
Yelling your name.
Yes. Seinfeld for four?
Imagine it's on a clock, too. It's an hour free. You're like, dude, I'm up in the 500s. So I don't know what you're doing down there.
Cartwright.
Cartwright. So four.
I was just at a golf tournament in the last couple of days, and Rob Brown was there. I don't know if you remember the player Rob Brown.
103 points with the Pittsburgh Penguins win.
Yeah, so Brownie, he played in Kamloops for Ken Hitchcock. So he gets on the mic and always tells these Hitch stories about, this is old school Western Hockey League, but one time they were in New Westminster, and apparently somebody in the crowd ordered 10 Domino's pizza to the bench. And apparently Hitch was like, I'll take them. So he was eating.
During the game, Hitch took the wheel.
He took a wheel and was eating it and calling out lines.
I'm not even surprised, but I respect it. I respect that move.
Did you used to, when you were on the bench, when games were being played, were you one of those guys ordering hot dogs and food?
Like I would eat, yes. I was a constant nibbler. As I am on the show, as I am anywhere,
I know goalies nibbling. That have the hot dogs in their gloves.
I got busted with a hot dog in my glove one time in Montreal by Joel Quenneville, but I used to have like little like jujubes and jawbreakers and stuff. Like I would have them not in my glove, but I would have them inside my pad. So
why not, man? You're basically a spectator. You could go in at any point, but
you're hungry. It's like watching a movie or watching anything on TV or a ball game,
right?
You're going to get hungry.
Yeah, I knew a guy. I think his name, I'm trying to remember his last name. Mark DeFore? Mark DeFois?
Mark DeMore. Shaky.
Yes.
His next
Shaky
name.
DeMore played for the Calgary Flames for a short time. He loved to eat on the bench.
And he liked to
liked to do
drink,
other things, too.
Well, no kidding. And we were talking about Steve's Chinese food delivery story, and it launched into a conversation about why we don't see Chinese food being available at stadiums.
Why
can't you, man? It's always the standard hot dogs, hamburgers, pizza. Why not set up shop with...
So are you making a push?
I'm making a push. I think at the ACC and the Rogers Center, there should be like a Mandarin in there. Whoa. And I think it would change the whole game, change the whole operation.
My business is going to hell, by the way, the newspaper business. And we don't even know how much longer they're going to be around or whatever. Right. I'm thinking now. I'm going into the Chinese food in arena business.
Dude, that would be...
Can you imagine how much of a game changer that would be? Like, let's say you're at a ball game.
What do you think they would have to... What would they have to serve?
Well, I think fully authentic. Like, I'm talking... You're sitting at a ball game. You know when your buddy gets up, you go with three or four guys. End of the fifth, he gets up. He's like, all right, I'm going to get drinks. Anyone want anything?
Right.
And you lean over and you say, grab me a program, a Coors Light, and some Mugu Gai Pan.
Sweet and sour chicken.
How amazing would that be?
Don't forget the sauce.
Yeah, and make sure you get the sauce right.
Okay, so I've been to the Rogers Center, and don't they serve like pulled pork sandwiches?
You can get some pretty decent.
I'm not going to say amazing food, but I'm on the Chinese food train.
Right.
I have yet to be... I've never seen it. I've never gone to a Mandarin, though, yet. I still have to go.
You know what?
That's shocking. Don't say it, Steve.
Okay, I'm not going to say it.
Don't start chirping Mandarin.
You're talking to somebody who's a veteran of the Mandarin.
I get after
my
the
mom
Mandarin.
Was like Mrs. Mandarin.
Oh, yes. Really?
Every single special event that we ever had when she was alive.
It was at the Mandarin.
It was Mandarin.
Well, we're making a push for
stadiums. I think we should make a push for it. And actually, I think if we could get it at the ACC right at the time that the Leafs start to get going for the season, they've still got plenty of time.
They got time.
You can build a makeshift Mandarin. Like, think about all those corner ones. I stopped at a Tim Hortons the other day in Whistler. It was literally like a phone booth. It was tiny. and it was in like a tourist area. So there was a bunch of different shops, and there was a corner Tim Hortons area. You could just get hot dogs, or not hot dogs, donuts and Timbits. And
like an express, like a Tim Hortons Express.
Tim Hortons Express. Why couldn't you have a Mandarin Express?
I'm with you, man.
At the ACC with about eight dishes.
I think we need a meeting. We got to call the head office. We got to call the people that run the ACC or the Rogers Center. And we got to start talking to arenas across the whole country.
Yeah, let's orchestrate this.
You would have to get, you'd have to talk to somebody who had the rights to the Mandarin to see if you could do an express. You'd have to talk to MLSC if they would allow you in the building.
That's fine. We can pull that off. I think we can pull it off.
Because in the U.S., you don't see it that much in Canada. There's a lot of airports with Chinese food.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. See, I don't think they're out here, but out west. I call it Edo, E-D-O.
Yes.
I think it's...
Those are the sushi places, right?
But they do a teriyaki chicken with
They can
rice.
Do work.
Unbelievable. Talk about hangover food. That is what you need. That's what I order.
Coming back from the Stanley Cup, I was flying out of Atlanta. Did the Chinese.
Good man. Yeah. That'll change the way you fly, too, I would suggest.
Yeah, you've got to make sure you're sitting at the back of the bus.
Can change your boiler routine.
In case things change.
Yeah. We should point out that Jace just walked off in the 10th, the grand slam from Steve Pearce. It's almost like a wasted grand slam when you only need one run. Like, it counts, right? Because they end up winning 8-4, but...
That's two comebacks.
Two in a row, or they... Like, Morales hit another tire in the ninth tonight. Last night, he hit the winner.
Four wins in a row. Two from Morales in the ninth, 2 days in a row. And they're behind in the first today. They're behind again. They're behind late. They tie it up in the ninth. I mean, Oakland's a bad ball team.
They're brutal.
But
you still
need it. It's nice to see them at least performing to a little bit of what we hoped they would be this season.
And you get a little bit of emotion out of Gibby and Stroman and Martin.
I mean, we were talking about this before we came on. Steve, you were, I believe, channeling the great Dave Hodge when... You were saying that he has said many times, you watch baseball enough, you're always going to see something new. Gibbons getting tossed is not new. I mean, Gibbons, he's actually getting tossed less this year than he did a year ago, which is surprising because they're much worse this year. You would think he would have even more anxiety issues and problems with the umps and the way the strike zone is working out. But if you missed it, I mean, Stroman was struggling. He was struggling.
Fighting.
Like he was the umpire potentially squeezing him and the Athletics starter a little bit? Sure, but it was going both ways. I mean, if you were watching the A's pitch, you realized that it wasn't as if this was one-sided. I didn't see it as being one-sided. I think Stroman has had two tough outings in a row. He was struggling. He was walking a lot of guys. He walked six guys, I believe, today through 4 2/3 before getting tossed. He's given up a bunch of hits, got down early. He's been worried about the blister. He had that problem last outing. Seems like maybe he was concerned about it today. But he also didn't do anything that should have provoked being tossed. I mean, he essentially stared at the umpire long enough where the ump said, "You're out." And then Russell Martin, all he did was turn around. He turned around. He must have said something.
He must have had something under his breath. For a
knowing Russell, wasn't under his breath.
Yeah, he may have been chirping. Probably chirping throughout the game a little bit, too. But... I can't recall the last time. I don't think I've ever seen a pitcher and a catcher, a battery, be tossed off the same pitch, off the same dispute. And it happened.
And it looked like Stroman was going to attack him until he got grabbed on the way. He looked like he was running straight for Will Little in this situation.
You're not so much worried about Stroman. If his dad came out of the stands, his dad's that monster.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, he would kill this guy.
Will Little, this is nothing new, by the way, for Will Little. About a month ago, he tossed Bob Melvin, the Oakland manager, and one of the Oakland A's out of the game.
Really?
And Sal Bando, you know, the great player who broadcasts their games now, called it the worst umpiring he's ever seen. Now,
really?
Sal Bando has been around the big league as player and broadcaster forever and ever, and he called this guy the worst. He's also the guy that threw Tony Pena out at the World Baseball Classic. So the question you got to ask today is, Will Little... Why?
Well, no kidding. I mean, how, like, this happens all the time with umpires where they have thin skin. Like, you know the saying small man syndrome?
Yeah.
This is like small umpire syndrome where the guy, he can't accept a glare from Stroman. Like, Stroman's the guy with emotion. Stroman's the guy who's pitching. He's the one who's trying to perform. He's not having a good day. Obviously, the Jays had been complaining throughout the first four innings that they didn't love the strike zone. Again, in my opinion, it was going both ways. Oakland had the same beef, so I'm not saying that only the Jays had this beef, and as a result, they deserve to be overly upset. I don't think they do. I think it was just a cocktail of emotion and bad pitching and a couple of bad bad strikes or ball calls that they thought should have gone one way or another that led to this. But it's not as if Stroman charged him first, wow, and then he got tossed. He just stared at him, and he was like, I thought that was a strike. He called it a ball, and then the ump tosses him. And
all I can think of is for Martin to walk up, so you wonder if as he's walking up, he says something to him, like, are you going to pull your head out of your ass here? Or
like leading into the end.
Leading into
I could see that.
Because that usually, I know just from being on the bench or being on the ice, sometimes when you get in it with a ref, before the call is even made, you say something like, hey, let's pull it together here. We're trying to play a game. Or, you know, so he might have led, and then when he goes to turn around, the ump's like, I've had enough.
You're both gone. Yeah, I don't want any of it.
Well, it's funny because I think it was the eighth inning. Maybe it was the eighth inning. Jose Bautista strikes out on a dubious call, third strike, although I think the ump thought he swung.
Right.
And he turns, and he lets him have it. And it's the kind of let him have it that normally you would toss the guy in a second. Like, yeah, you're not allowed to argue balls and strikes in the big leagues. That's
right.
That's standard rule. You can't. You get tossed if you do that.
Right.
He didn't toss him. And what Stroman did and what Martin did, and I expect what Gibby did, was a lot less than what Bautista did. But at that point, it was like, I'm settling down here.
Yeah.
But what Little did today brings up the argument again about robot umpires at home plate. Because there's been so much talk this season about the strike zone and about how it's being called and how close they are in technology to having robot umpires.
Well, but here's the thing. If you look at the pitch, I believe the pitch tracker had it a ball. So it's not, he didn't get it wrong.
No, but it brings up the argument with passionate fans.
I hear. Well, I'm not a fan of it. I'm not a proponent of the robotic strike zone. I have a feeling it's going to happen at some point in our lifetime. But again, if you look at the pitch tracker for both the Jays and the A's through five innings, it was effectively the same. So if you, it's not that the strike zone has to be identical every day. It's that you have to be consistent. Yeah. I think it was consistent. I think this was just Stroman was having a bad day, and he was going to take it out on somebody.
But what you have to do as you're being consistent is be a little bit deaf.
But that's a different conversation. So you're saying you want the robotic umpire because then they won't say anything.
No,
they won't throw anyone out ever.
I don't necessarily want it. I'm curious as to how it would work and what it would seem like.
Okay, so do you believe that Major League Baseball would try it out maybe at a lower level to see if it, you know, how it would work?
Yes, maybe in the
maybe in the spring.
Spring, like, why not? I mean, if that's where you believe it's headed, I don't know. I'm kind of with you, Brian, as far as, like, I do like human error. I do like the emotion.
I like this, what we saw today.
Well, every time I see an umpire, I think of Leslie Nielsen in The Naked Gun. So
right.
I'm always like, I joke about that. But it is such a big business, and you want consistency. But I've never noticed in watching baseball, and I've started to watch a lot more, is you're right. If it's supposed to be a strike, a lot of times they'll call it, but it's how they feel and how they're going to call it that night. But it's almost like refs in the NHL, too. Sometimes they let things go. They kind of, a lot of times, establish the pace of the game or how they're going to call a game, and they do it early on or they put the whistles away later. It would be interesting. I'd like to try to see them try it in a lower level to
see
if it would even work.
I think they would for sure. They wouldn't just drop it on the laps of Major League Baseball. But listen, I'm not sitting here sticking up for Will Little or any umpire that throws guys out for effectively doing nothing. That's stupid. I mean, that's
right.
Bad for business because people show up to the park to see Stroman pitch,
yeah,
to see Martin hit. They don't show up to see this guy toss somebody.
Right.
But the emotion of a sport and the interactions between managers and umpires and pitchers and batters and stuff, I find entertaining.
Yeah.
I do. And ultimately, it's still an entertainment business. I think sometimes we forget that. Like, it's so easy to say, I want everything right. I want everything perfect.
Right.
And then it's going to get to that point, and maybe the personality and the character of a sport will be taken away.
But they've gotten rid of that face-to-face argument thing that you know, we used to see with Billy Martin.
The nose to nose.
Yeah, Pearl Weaver. Kicking dirt on the guy's shoes.
I actually love that.
How great were those?
It's comedic, really. It's fun.
What's wrong with that?
You think about it. There's some 62-year-old guy out there who's yelling at some 58-year-old guy.
Oh, man. Like Pinella. Pinella, like the guy, he's 260 pounds.
He's throwing stuff out on the field.
Yeah. His baseball uniform's way too tight to begin with. Yeah, he comes bombing out. He's yelling and screaming. He's getting tossed. I think that's what changed. I think at some point the wives of these managers went to the guys and said, I will divorce you if you do that again on SportsCenter.
No, I think baseball has put in means to eliminate that kind of thing. You take a guy like John Gibbons, who was a catcher. Catchers have the best relationships historically with umpires because they're right together all the time. And Gibbons is a hard guy to dislike in any way.
Yeah.
And so he has a pretty good relationship with the umpires, but he gets tossed a lot. Although not much this year.
Last year he got tossed a lot.
He gets tossed a lot. And I think it's because his expectation of them is pretty high.
Probably. Do you ever subscribe to the theory that, almost like we've seen in the movies, where he goes out and he said, you're going to have to toss me here.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know what I mean? Like, he lets him know, like, I want to be tossed.
Mm-hmm. I think if it's building up, like, right. I don't know if that was the case today, but if he's already been out once or twice,
right?
Or, well, certainly once, if he's made some comments.
But he wants to let his team know, like, I'm giving them a jolt here. So he comes out and says, I'm going to get in your face, I'm going to toss you, I want you to toss me.
I think that happens.
Well, I know it. I know of situations in hockey, I'm sure you're aware of them, where, like, the captain of a team skates across the ice and raises his voice and yells at the umpire, my coach wants me to yell at you, so I'm over here yelling at you. And then you skate away, kind of laughing.
Right.
But absolutely. But he puts on the show, and then the referee gets his chest out, and they get into an argument, and on the game goes, and the coach is happy because it's got his point in.
I agree, and it does happen because you go across, and I've heard guys say, listen, my coach wants me to see what's going on here. Like, and these guys know, the linesmen and the refs, they're veteran guys, but...
The worst part is when some guys do impressions of their coach as doing the yelling.
I can see that.
The ref.
I've heard that one a few times.
Impression of Pat Quinn.
Yeah.
Send O-Dog over. He's pretty good at that.
He could probably pull it off.
They did some Brian Murray over the years, too, which was pretty funny.
Yeah, the Brian Murray would be a tough sell to try to keep your face straight, I would think.
Yeah,
that's funny.
We'll keep chatting about what happened at the Rogers Center today. Anyway, the Jays won. I mean, even with all the controversy and guys getting tossed, they end up walking off in the 10th. They take all four games of the four-game series against Oakland. Now they've got the Angels in town, and they can beat the Angels. I mean, they can get something rolling here. It's just a matter of whether or not you really believe there's enough time. And I don't, and I don't believe Shapiro and Atkins believe it. But Noodles is in here. There was some news out of Montreal today. The Andre Markov story is strange. I mean, email comes out, I guess Twitter maybe got to it first, but that Markov and the Habs are done. He's not coming back. Negotiations have come to an end. And my initial expectation was, okay, then that means he'll move on to another team. And now we know that's not going to happen. He's just leaving. He's going to the KHL. And I wonder if the Olympics factored in here too. If he's thinking, if I'm going to be barely in the league anywhere, I'm not going to get my price, I might as well go home. He's going to get paid.
Yeah.
I think he's had some family tragedy recently. The mother of his kids passed away and gets to play in the Olympics. I mean, that's enticing for some people, but I didn't see it getting to a point where Markov is just done with the NHL.
Do you think him becoming his own agent?
I think that had to factor in, don't you?
Well, his demands were awfully high for his age.
2 years? What were you, what, 2 at 6?
Yeah. I think so, reportedly.
I mean, he's a good player.
He's a very good player, but the legs, I mean, there were nights where I thought he had wooden legs. He looked like Forrest Gump out there nights.
I wonder, and this is just my own wondering. What if he signs a deal in the KHL that at the end of the Olympics allows him to go back to the NHL?
That's fair.
And he gets signed by somebody for the final couple of months of the season. Plays a few months. He's a guy who knows how to play, clearly.
Yeah.
And there he gets his Olympic opportunity. Because if you're an old Russian, he's 39, you've played in the Olympics before, and you've had terrible disappointments. I mean, the Russian performances in most of the Olympics, hockey-wise, have been terrible.
Yeah, they have.
And so, if you're Andre, this is your last shot. You're not playing at 43.
right,
or 44, whatever. I don't know when his birthday is, but you're not going to be playing in the next Olympics. So this is your shot, maybe, to win something at a time where who knows what any of these teams are.
Well,
I could see that being a sales pitch.
I will give Bergevin credit. Like, there's a lot of reasons why you could have brought him back. Guys, get 909. He's 10 away from 1,000 with your organization, too. Like,
I didn't realize he had been there for 16 years.
You know what's funny is what's resonated. When Radulov chose to go to Dallas, and the comment from Bergevin was, you want loyalty by a dog. And when I thought of the Markov thing going south here, it's the same analogy. You have to have that type of cutthroat. If you don't believe that Markov, and I personally didn't believe that Markov was worth $6 million, even on a one-year deal. Would I be fine with him on a one-year deal at four? Yeah, absolutely. But six, 2 years at six, that's rich. That's rich, and good for Bergevin to not cave into that.
Yeah. Now the Habs and where they take it, they're a really fascinating team to break down.
Mark Streit, who couldn't dress with the Pittsburgh Penguins in the playoffs.
And now he's in
now
Montreal.
I agree. I don't think that that's Markov's replacement, because it's like 650 or 700. It's a low one way.
But you lost Yemelin, too, so you got two guys off your six-man defense gone.
Yeah, I think Streit maybe even could be a guy that if they see he can play, if not, you can put him in the minors, he wouldn't even think twice.
Well, and they traded Sergachev.
They've lost three guys.
Yeah. That's going to be a very interesting team going forward. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't see them. We've talked about this at length. I don't think that they're better from the end of the season last year. They've gotten worse on the back end. And Drouin, to me, it can be an upside on Radulov. But outside of that, you still, who's your number one centerman? What's going on? Yeah, you got Price locked up, which is good. But their D are worse, and let's say their forward group is the same.
Is this the new model? Pittsburgh wins a Stanley Cup with Dumoulin and Hainsey as their number one pair. Is this the new model? You can try and win with average guys on D.
Well, you better upgrade.
Well, the Leafs are hoping for it, because Hainsey's going to be playing in the top four. That's what Lou was saying.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Good seeing you, man.
Well, thanks for having me. Friend of the show.
Whenever you're ready to pop in.
Big fan of the show.
Door's always open.
I know. I'll pop in periodically. My wife is quite lazy. She started to pack it
in. Well, she's toast, man. She is out of here. She was supposed to put in two more days, and she's gone.
Wow.
And he'll be doing the double daddy thing.
She does have an excuse. I will say that.
Oh, yeah. She certainly does.
She's not laying at home on the couch like Peg Bundy. She's grinding out a kid here, hopefully.
It's go time.
Yep.
All right, buddy. Good luck with that, and we'll get you back in here whenever you want to come back.
We'll chat then.
There he is. Jamie Noodles McLennan making a rare late July appearance on his own show. Simmons is in here from Sun Media. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues. We'll keep touching on what went down at the Rogers Center today. The Jays take the four-game sweep over the Athletics, but more people talking about what happened in the fifth inning this afternoon. This is Overdrive on the TSN Go app. It was a pretty wild afternoon down at the Rogers Center, but the Jays walk off. Steve Pearce hits a grand slam in the 10th. And like I said earlier in the hour, it's almost a wasted grand slam. Like, you don't get credit for a grand slam if it's in the bottom of an inning and all you need is one in extras.
Well, how does that work? Do the other runs even count?
They do. Technically, it's scored 8-4, but you only needed five.
Yeah, but you know what? It's a walk-off home run. Which is a great way for considering what the Jays did last night, and considering how they worked through today, and you know there aren't going to be a lot of real happy, fascinating moments in this crazy bad season, but the last couple of days, you've got to say this is fun to watch.
It's been fun and it's been entertaining in terms of the subplots. Like again, what happens this afternoon with Stroman and Martin and Gibbons getting tossed, and it's a day game in late July. It kind of has a nostalgic feel to it. And the walk-offs last night, like they benefited. I tweeted this out while I'm watching it. That Casilla put forth one of the worst pitching performances I've ever seen out of anyone. I mean, the two sliders he lets get away from him on Donaldson. He had Donaldson dead to rights for the most part in terms of the count. Those two of the worst sliders you've ever seen over Donaldson's head. And then gets cute with Smoke on his first two pitches and throws a pizza down the middle that you could see Smoke was going to launch into Lake Ontario. And the next pitch, again, was like a batting practice pitch to Morales, and the game's over.
I thought it was Morales' dad was pitching.
It was, wasn't that awful?
It was like home run derby.
Like, that's why the A's are what the A's are.
But
still, the Jays, to their benefit and to their credit, they won.
Perspective for a minute, because I'm not a Kendrys Morales fan per se, unless he's hitting home runs, because I think he's just so slow on the bases that he clogs you up all the time. Do you, after a couple of days like this, do you pick up the phone if you're Ross Atkins or Mark Shapiro? Do you pick up the phone and see what you might be able to obtain
with
Kendrys Morales?
Let's touch on that in 2 minutes. All right, so the Jays did it again today. They tied the game up in the ninth. Morales hits a game-tying home run in the ninth. Steve Pierce hits a game-winning grand slam in the tenth. And the past two games have been thoroughly entertaining in terms of the finale. And, Steve, you posed the idea that maybe Shapiro and Atkins should be calling teams on Morales and his availability. And just based on the highs that he's running right now because of what he's done the past 2 days, but I just feel like baseball doesn't work that way. You know, I don't think if you were going to make those calls, you should have been making them weeks ago. And if you're an opposing GM who's interested or intrigued at all in a guy like Morales, I don't think you pick up the phone and say, you know what, you're right. Here's our third best prospect because he went off two games in a row.
No, I don't think that happens, but it doesn't hurt the conversation per se. I can go back years to give you an example. The Maple Leafs years and years ago were talking trade with the Atlanta Flames, and they were talking about trading Lanny McDonald in his early years to Atlanta. And it was because Lanny McDonald had not yet reached, you know, the career he was going to have later, and they were disappointed in the way his career began. And so they made a deal tentatively to trade Lanny McDonald to Cliff Fletcher in Atlanta. And that weekend, I think he had 3 goals in one game or 2 goals in one and 2 in another. But Harold Ballard basically said after the weekend, we're not trading this guy.
Well, what does that say?
Well, I'm just saying
if you're basing your knowledge and your expectations on something Harold Ballard
did. I'm just saying sometimes things switch based on performance in one way or another. We were hearing earlier today that Francisco Liriano seems to be in play and heading maybe to the Kansas City Royals.
Well, and his numbers have been brutal, but
I don't think as a starter. I think he'll come out of the bullpen and pitch as a lefty out of the bullpen, and then they're going to need him to throw strikes, which is always a challenge.
That's always been his problem, but he is a guy who's been around for a long time and has got a reputation as being someone who, when he's on, he can really be effective. And I do think last year's example may actually benefit the Jays in terms of them trading Liriano, because he was a hot mess in Pittsburgh. And then when he came here during the regular season, those final, whatever, 8-9 starts he made, he was pretty effective. Like, he put up some really solid numbers.
And he pitched real well in that playoff start until he got hit. When he got hit by the ball, it was really frightening at the time, and there was some concern about, you know, his career and where it was going from there. The reason I suggest Morales, and I've, this is going back for me a few weeks now, is you look at the roster as it's currently constructed. What do they have to do? Well, there's a lot of things they have to do. I mean, they got to get younger. They have to get more athletic. And you have this guy in the middle of your roster who is essentially, you know, he's a DH, can play a little bit of first base, as we've seen the last 2 days, can hit home runs on occasion. Can hit reasonably well, but he's a base clogger. And so when he gets on base, if he's on first, for example, after a single, you need another single and another single and maybe a third single to score him from first. That's how slow he is. And if Justin Smoke is the important bat that you're, you know, it's one of the guys you're now going to build around, assuming that this season is not a one-off, then you have Smoke, who's one of the slower runners in baseball, beside Morales, who might be the slowest runner in baseball. And then how do you get athletic when you've got that clogging up the middle of your roster going into next year? So I think at $11 million, I think that's a movable piece because it's not too expensive for what he is. And maybe you can get something reasonable for him, which would open up another place to find somebody younger, faster, more athletic.
I believe he has 2 more years left after this. But it's a commitment.
It's only $11 million a year.
No, which, it's not. But
for a guy who hits like him, I think is pretty cheap.
You broke down, though, the limitations in terms of what you're getting. He's never going to play defense for you. He's going to be a DH. So you're talking about an American League team. He's a switch hitter. He's got some pop. He's got some power. But he doesn't get on base a ton. When he does, to your point, it's generally sloppy. But I would be all for it because I think it would say something about Shapiron Atkins that we haven't had the opportunity to see yet. It would be an admission that they made a mistake, and they're going to rectify that mistake. And that's what I was saying a lot about Masai Ujiri over the past month, month and a half. Masai, I think at times, his reputation is a bit overinflated, at least in what's happened here. They've won a lot of games on his clock, but some of them were actually against what he really wanted to happen. He made the Rudy Gay trade because he wanted to be awful, and they got better. He wanted to trade Lowry. He had a deal. The Knicks turned it down. The core of this team, the Raptors, that won the 50-plus games and won playoff rounds were courtesy of Colangelo, for the most part. But what Masai has shown that I really appreciate, and I don't believe every GM has this type of DNA, is the ability to admit, you know what, I might have got something wrong here, so I'm going to change, including his reaction to the Rudy Gay deal, because he did that with the anticipation of them tanking and going for Andrew Wiggins or whomever. But then he realized, you know what, we're okay. Let's change where we're going here. Damari Carroll, he realized that was my big fish, biggest signing he's made in terms of free agency. Realized he had to get rid of him. He did it. Corey Joseph had to move on. Did it. Shapiron Atkins, I don't know if they have that ability.
Well, they did it with Grilly in a different kind of way.
But they designated him for assignment. He was so bad, it was like, you got to get out of here. Morales was their first big signing. Like, that was their first.
A small big signing. $11 million a year is not big by baseball standards.
Not in terms of who he was replacing.
Yeah.
Very big. In terms of the symbolism of it, that was their admission, Edwin's done, and this is our replacement.
The best GM I've ever been around, Pat Gillick. When he ran the Blue Jays and later the Orioles and later the Mariners and later the Phillies, he had a belief. If you make a mistake, correct it. Like, don't sit and suffer with it. If you trade for a guy who you think is going to do something for you then and he doesn't, don't sit there and wait for him to do something for you. Get rid of him before you come to it. And that's what they have a chance to do here, in my view, with Morales. And unless you view what's happened the last 2 days as the reason that you got him, and you're going to live with that. But I think they have to open up the possibilities here, because you can't hamstring the lineup the way it's now hamstrung.
Well, and you also have to realize what you actually can move. Morales, I believe, is movable. Tulowitzki is not movable, and he's as slow as Morales.
Well, he's hurt.
He's hurt worse.
He's hurt right now in terms of his ability to move.
But it's not like he was Ricky Henderson anyway.
No, but he got thrown out today on a play at home plate. He never should have been running because of his speed. Now he's got the groin thing going on, and he's not slow. Morales smoke slow.
He's pretty close to slow. He's real close, in my opinion. But even with the injuries, without it. But my point being is, I don't think you're going to be able to unload him. So if you have to get younger,
you can't.
You have to get more athletic.
$10 million or something like that.
Well, I think more than that. A lot more than that.
Okay, I'm being nice.
Right.
But if you look.
So my point being, though, if you feel like you've got to change your roster, sometimes you've got to move the guys that maybe you wouldn't want to move first. But because you have to move someone or something, you got to make difficult decisions.
Estrada will not be here next year under the assumption that he's a free agent. That's $14 million. Liriano's going. That's another $14 million. There's either 26 or 28 million. Batista's going. There's another 18 right there. If you add Morales in there with 11, suddenly you're playing with a lot more money. You can start clearing off salary and getting close to $70 million, never mind raises and stuff, of money you otherwise wouldn't have had. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what they need to do here. To not always operate in free agency, but operate so that you can pick up people from other teams that maybe they don't want to pay.
Change your dynamics, for sure. We'll get back into what went down at the Rogers Center today. If you're just tuning in, Walk-off in the 10th, Steve Pierce hits a grand slam. They take all four games against Oakland. Now they've got the Angels in town. Then I believe they've got the White Sox. So they got some bad teams coming through here, or maybe they can start winning some games. But the big story came out of the fifth inning when Gibbons, Martin, and Stroman were all tossed. We'll continue to talk about that. And Andre Markov, his career as a Hab is officially over. He's leaving the NHL. He's going to the KHL. What's going on in Montreal? We'll pick up on that as well. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app. So we had Noodles in here earlier. There's a couple of hockey stories out there. Andre Markov done in Montreal. He's off to the KHL, but sounds like he still wants to play in the NHL and wants to play in Montreal, but he was his own agent and he never got the deal he was looking for.
Reminds me of that old expression, you know, the lawyer that hires himself as a fool for a client.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the same with an agent, especially when you're 39 years old and you're a free agent and you're looking for 2 years and $6 million a year. That's wishful thinking.
And it feels as if he had really focused his list of teams he was willing to go to almost to one. Like, to be fair to him, he spent his whole career in Montreal. And I can understand why he'd want to finish it there. But if you're not willing to open it up and try to get some leverage and other teams talking, and it didn't feel as if that was the case. It was like Montreal or KHL, and well, KHL's the story.
Here. If you put it out there that you want 2 years and you're 39, and you put it out there that you want, you know, more than $5 million in the $6 million range, then probably no one in the NHL is going to consider you very serious about, you know, looking elsewhere. And maybe somebody wanted to give him a year somewhere, and he didn't want to go to one of those kind of places.
Unless you're Patrick Marleau, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's a real interesting conversation to have about, you know, what. You know, where the Leafs are. If you're Lou Lamoriello or you're Brendan Shanahan, for $6 million bucks a year, is your team better with Patrick Marleau or with Andre Markov?
I think with Marleau because he's a better player. He is. I mean, Markov plays the position of need, but I'm not watching Markov at times last year. He looked really old and really slow. And I think what this team is trying to be is a high-paced team. And Marleau is more conducive to that.
And yet, on the power play, which has been one of Markov's specialty over the years, he's been pretty close to exceptional.
They don't need power play help. They had the first or second best power play in the league last year.
Wait. I'm gonna back that up.
Hmm?
Who's their point guy? Who's their shooter from back there? I don't think they have one.
I don't think they need one.
It showed in the playoffs to me they do.
Okay, we'll pick back up on that.
Okay.
And we'll get back into what's going on with the Habs, what happened with the Jays today. We'll catch up with Bob Weeks, day one of the Canadian Open at Glen Abbey as well. We'll get you an update. Overdrive continues. Hour two up next, TSN 1050.